You're a children's book writer, too many to name. What are we at right now, 19?
Yeah, actually 20.
Wow.
20 titles. Yeah, it's been a good run.
You slipped another one by me. Today, I wanted to talk especially about two of them. Everyone Loves Cupcake is a book that you're going to be talking about at Book Bug on September 24th. But there's another one that I think is particularly relevant at this point in American politics. It's called Grace for President.
Yeah, Grace for President. Gosh, that book was first published back in 2008.
And I bet it's making a resurgence right about now, isn't
it? Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Every election, it kind of has another life to it. And this year, definitely, it's been all kinds of interest in the book. And Rutgers University did a wonderful program where they were sending out copies of Grace for President, congresswomen and mayors and senators, and encouraging them to go out in their communities and read Grace for President to, as part of their Teach a Girl to Lead program. And so that was really exciting. That all took place in March.
So in a nutshell, the book is about a little girl who decides that she wants to run for president in her school.
Yeah. And the idea for the book came about because of actually something my editor's daughter said at the time, years and years ago. I think she was about 5 at the time. And her teacher had actually unrolled a poster of all the American presidents. And the little girl's name was Grace. Looked at the poster, and she just said, you know, where are the girls? There's no girls up there.
Mm-hmm.
And so this prompted this discussion between my editor and I, and she's like, I'm wondering if there's like a story there. And she asked me if I would, you know, put some thought into it. So I did a lot of research and looked at what kind of books were out there already, children's books about, you know, presidents and kids who want to be president, school elections. And I kind of found that none of the books address the whole electoral college vote. Probably I was wondering, with good reason maybe, because it's kind of a complicated thing. So at that point, I kind of wondered if there was some way I could incorporate this into the book and explain it in a way that kids might understand.
Well, you did a beautiful job of it.
I
think
you.
It helps us adults understand, too.
You know, I've gotten so many emails over the years, sometimes even from like high school teachers saying, thank you, because this is a really simple explanation. And it's a fun format that is not intimidating in any way. And it's also, it's a great story. So yeah, that's definitely been in the limelight lately. And I'm really proud of the book and excited to see, you know, what's going to happen this election year. But the book could be obsolete. And that was always my hope, you know, when I first wrote it.
Yeah, it's like, what's the big deal, right? So how important is it? And this doesn't apply just to Grace for President. I would think it probably applies to many, if not all, of your books. What's the importance of role models for children?
You know, I never really sit down to write a story with, you know, that in mind. I think that if you're writing a good story, that kind of comes organically from it. But I obviously do feel like it's important in the end to have a character that kids can identify with, and all kids, all races, all sexes. And I think that's part of the reason, you know, that I love this job so much is that, you know, I write these stories because for some reason I get these crazy ideas and they just speak to me and I run with them. But later, when the book gets published and I see how other people and kids in particular connect with the stories and the characters, so rewarding. And it's just this very humbling experience to know that, you know, these characters that spring up from these stories actually impact strangers. I think for the longest time, I used to think that, you know, only my friends and family were reading my books, but apparently that's not true. So,
no, I don't think so. You've gone way beyond that. You've got at least a couple of New York Times bestsellers in there, don't you?
Yeah, Grace for President being one of them, and the other one being The Sandwich Swap, which is a book that I co-authored with Queen Rania Al Abdullah of Jordan, which was a really interesting experience to be a part of that project.
So why children's books, Kelly? Why did you ever have this moment that you thought, well, I love to write and I like this better than that? Have you ever thought about adult fiction or nonfiction? Why children's books?
I get asked that question a lot. And I really don't know how to answer it other than this is just the format that I connect to. I love children's books, and I, you know, really, really rediscovered them when my children were young. I obviously didn't read them through college, and so when I had kids of my own, I was reading a lot to my own children, and I just fell in love with the picture books and the funny stories and the art, and so somehow it lit a spark in me and set me down this path, but I can't even imagine writing for adults. It's just something that I have no interest in. And I suppose it's kind of like, you know, how different doctors go into different specialties. What podiatrists want to be a podiatrist. I don't know. It's just something that I connect to. And maybe there's a little bit of that Peter Pan in me.
Keeps you young, eh?
yeah. And I just, I love the stories. And I also love the community. It really is a very warm and welcoming and very tight-knit community of children's authors and illustrators. And it's kind of like a little family. Everybody knows everybody, and social media has really changed that, you know, in the last 10 years. But
yeah.
So it's very supportive and a lot of fun. I mean, I have a really fun job.
And you have three children of your own, yes?
Yes, yeah, they're older now, they're all young adults, and when I started down this path many years ago, they were, of course, toddlers and preschoolers, and a lot of my early work was inspired by things that were happening in the home.
a lot of sleep deprivation
in my stories, and clutter, and so they grew up, you know, with me doing this as a career, which was really wonderful because it's a very flexible career to be able to work from home, but... And my oldest daughter is a nurse. She's a registered nurse working in a hospital. My son just graduated from Oakland University, and he's going on to, he wants to get his PhD in history. He wants to teach at the university level. And my youngest daughter is a very successful cosmetologist, a makeup artist and hairstylist. And so they all kind of went their own paths.
Very different paths. That's fun.
Yeah. They're very different people. And it was one thing my husband and I both really encouraged them from a young age is just to follow your passion, you know, and you can be successful at whatever it is as long as you, you know, have that passion and interest.
Well, now they're adults, but back then when they were little, were they something of your test audience or your first editors and, Mom, I don't get this, or?
Yes, absolutely. They were brutally honest, which I suppose
is
good. They would say, you know, Mom, kids won't get that, or kids won't find that funny, or that's not funny, and I don't understand that. And so they were a good barometer because, you know, sometimes when you write, you want to be, like, clever and, you know, and put some fun puns in there and stuff. But, you know, also have to remember who's the audience and your responsibility to your audience. So there was always that balance. But, yeah, they were good test subjects.
I would think so, yeah. But I have always thought, and I loved story time with my kids. I would read into them well into their preteens before I let them go. I just love that whole family time together. And I've always thought that children's books, like you, I've just really enjoyed them. And I would think your audience is first and foremost the children, but isn't it adults too?
You know, it really is both. And I have to strike that balance because adults are buying the books. And so if the adult doesn't find the story engaging, then it's not going to get into a book that they want to read night after night after night. And as a parent, I remember reading some, you know, some of the Thomas the Tank Engine books and some of the Barbie books. And, you know, it was just like, you just couldn't wait for the stories to be over. So then as my kids, you know, we were going to the library and checking out lots of great books, and I was discovering great books along with them. And so I would really identify with the books, particularly the humorous books that worked on multiple levels. So the kids weren't lost, but there was few things in there for the adults. It's kind of like how, you know, Pixar movies are. And so in particular, John Cheska, who I always admired, his books were wonderful. And they made me laugh, and like The True Story of the Three Little Pigs and The Stinky Cheese Man. And so those were the kind of books that I thought, oh, I'd love to write that kind of book. But yeah, my primary responsibility is it to the children. And but also, yeah, I do keep that in mind. And I also write books and stories that amuse me. Because if my heart...
Because you may have to read them 50 times over.
Right. And not only that, if I'm not finding joy in the writing of the story, I think that somehow comes out in the book.
Oh, yes.
So it's like this magic secret ingredient that is in books. And I think that's what it is if the writer, the author, or the illustrator, you know, was really in a place of joy during the creation of a story.
When you start planning out a story and developing your characters, do you consciously think about life lessons for children? Or you kind of said something about that earlier. Does it just happen organically?
I think there's a little bit of a danger in setting out to, you know, teach a moral lesson. And I think that's not the best place to begin. Usually what happens is there is some kind of lesson there, because that's what a good story is. A good story is about growth and change. Mm-hmm. And so I think that just kind of comes with the storytelling, or it should anyway.
So do you start with character development?
I start with just idea, and idea may be a character, or idea might be a thing, an idea might be a place.
Mm.
All kinds of different things that are the seed of the idea. And I get ideas from all kinds of crazy places, but I can't say it's one in particular. And sometimes I will just hear the first line of a story, and I don't even fully know what the idea is yet. It's almost like being a radio receiver where it just kind of comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I jot it down and look at it, and like, where did this come from? And it's a really interesting process and how it works. And I'm sure every author, illustrator has different stories about how it works for him or her. But again, I don't know where these ideas come from. A lot of it, too, is just being inspired by something I see or I hear.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Everyone Loves Cupcake. Is that your absolute newest book, or?
Yes. Well, actually, that one comes out in September. The most newest one, which will be out in August 23rd, is called Dragon Was Terrible. And it's illustrated by Craig Bazzoli. And, of course, it's about a terrible dragon. There's no big mystery there.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. I had a great time writing that story. It has a very strong voice. I think kids will get a kick out of it. I know I had a ball writing it. But yeah, Everyone Loves Cupcake comes out in September, and it is the follow-up book to Everyone Loves Bacon.
Ever had a cupcake with bacon on it, Kelly? I have.
Actually,
it sounded odd, but you know it works.
I've had bacon donuts in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Voodoo Donuts has bacon donuts, and they're really good. I know it is strange, but it's like maple syrup. It's very good.
Exactly. We had a cupcake shop here in Kalamazoo for a while, and they had a cupcake that had like a maple syrupy type of a frosting with a piece of bacon on top, and it worked. It really did.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's a way to come, you know, for book three, right?
Right. But yeah, so it all started with bacon, and that was just a crazy, silly idea that one day I was just kind of noticing a lot of bacon merchandise, because I go to a lot of schools and I see, you know, kids wearing bacon shirts and socks and there's necklaces and on and on and on. And I was just like, oh, what's up with bacon? Everyone loves bacon. I'm like, wait a minute. If everyone loves bacon, how come nobody's ever written a bacon book before? It kind of seemed like this untapped territory. And so really, when I sat down to write it, it was, again, to amuse myself. I was just cracking myself up at the idea of this arrogant strip of bacon, because, you know, if everybody loves him, then, you know, it all kind of goes to his head.
Gets yeah, yeah.
When I wrote it and finished it, I sent it to my agent, and I said, and the email just says, this is quite possibly the best and the worst thing I have ever written. I have no idea what you're going to say, because my agent is a vegetarian, but, but he wrote back and said that he loved it. And so anyway, yeah, bacon did very well, because I think, again, it was kind of one of those books that people see and they just kind of crack up, really silly. But so, yeah, so then, you know, my Ed and I talked about, you know, possibly doing a follow-up book. And so we kind of did some brainstorming about what might be a good character to a second book. And if you're not familiar with Everyone Loves Bacon, I don't know if I should give away the ending, but he does get eaten at the end of the story.
Oh,
so
no.
We could not have a traditional sequel. I could have done a prequel, but so we needed a whole new character. And so, of course, everyone loves Cupcake, so we decided to go that route for the story. And it's a very different story. And Cupcake is sweet, haha, unlike mm-hmm. Bacon, who's arrogant. So, but it's kind of based a little bit, I guess, on, you know, my oldest child, who was the perfectionist. You know, if she got a B on a test, it was like the end of the world. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, striving to do your best. But sometimes it's not realistic to be perfect all the time. And so that's kind of what this character, Cupcake, is. Really tries her best to be so perfect all the time. And the stress of it kind of gets to her. So
have her sprinkles just so.
Yes. The tarts are jealous of her, of course, and they say, the sprinkle out of place. So, but yeah, it's really funny. And I actually think it's even funnier than Bacon in some regards. And there's some puns in there, and the art is just fantastic. Eric White is the illustrator, of course, of Bacon and Cupcake, and he did a tremendous job. And Bacon is featured in a diner, like kind of like a 50s diner, and of course, Everyone Loves Cupcake. The setting is in a bakery, and the characters are adorable and funny and a lot of personality.
What can we expect at the event on September 24th? Other than I do hear a rumor of cupcakes.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. Yeah, I heard they might be having a bake sale to support a local school, and I'm not sure if that's changed or not because we're still, you know, a few weeks off from that. But I think that might be happening, and of course, I'll be reading Everyone Loves Cupcake, and maybe I'll share Bacon with them as well. But it'll be a lot of fun. The publisher put together this really cute activity kit, so we have some coloring sheets and papers that, you know, kids can either do there or take home with them, and I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be a lot of fun, I think.